Okay, we're beginning here, 13 lines from the bottom of Tzadi Vava and Bet. The Gemara asks, Ibayluhu, kichesh basar machmat melacha amai. If the animal loses weight or is weakened by the fact that it is being utilized by a borrower, does he have to compensate the lender for that loss in value or that degradation in the strength of the animal? Amalei hau mi Rabbanan. So one of the Rabbanan spoke up, Rav Chilkia breid Rav Avya Shemei. Michlal, from this you would infer, Techei meita machmat melacha michayev, that if it died from its work, it would also be chayav. Lema, why can't he speak up and suggest, Lav du'ukma bikilta shilta. I didn't borrow it to leave it in its cage or to lock it up. I borrowed it for its utility, to use it. And therefore, losses that derive from its utility or its usage should be classified as part and parcel of the borrowing of the animal. So you could differentiate, and that might be the Gemara's Havamina here, between the case of the animal weakening versus the animal dying, in which case something is a foreseeable loss or degradation in the animal. If you work the animal, it'll be weakened or lose weight from that, versus death, which would be something that would be unforeseen. So if you want to suggest that the two are correlated, then for sure, if you believe that if the animal dies, then you are patur, and certainly in the case where the animal simply weakens, you should be patur. And that's the point of what Rav Avya is saying here, is that we know, and we're going to see this in 1 second, that meita machlat melacha is a patur for a shoel. If that's already a patur for a shoel, then why shouldn't it also be a patur in terms of kichesh, in the degradation, in the value, or the weakening of the animal? Elama rova, lo mi baye kichesh basar machmat melacha de patur. We don't even need to say that if it loses weight or is weakened by the fact that you utilized it, that you're patur. Ela afilu meita machmat melacha nami patur. Even if it dies because of the work that it is doing, then the shoel is patur. Damalei lav lukma bekilta shilta, because he can say, I didn't borrow the animal to keep it caged up. I didn't borrow it in order not to utilize it. The whole point of borrowing it is to utilize it. Despite that fact, it's still difficult to understand why the shoel should be patur. Because in general, the shoel is chayab for onsin. Any type of death that happens to the animal is chayab. So why is this an exception to the rule? So the Rishonim approach it from two perspectives. One perspective of the Ramban is the fact that the pshia, or the negligence of the lender, the shoel is not responsible for. And if the animal dies because of working for the borrower, it's clear that something was already wrong with this animal, or there was some contributing factor that came from the mashil, from the lender, that caused the death of the animal. And therefore we don't hold the shoel, the borrower, accountable. Or you have to suggest, like the Rashba, once we determine that the weakening of the animal is not something you are liable for because that's the regular utility of the animal and that's what you're expected to do, then we also say the death of the animal is a foreseeable outcome because that's what happens. Animals weaken when they work. Animals lose weight when they work. And so the ultimate or the greatest form of weakness or loss of weight would be death. And therefore it becomes a foreseeable outcome here. And that's why the shoel is not chayav in this case for meita machmat milacha, nor is he chayav for kichesh basar machmat milacha. Okay, how gavro, the shoel nargo mechavre, this individual borrowed an axe from his friend, itvar, and it broke. After the kamei de rova, came before Rava to adjudicate the case and to determine whether he had to pay the axe back. Amalei, zil aite sade dalav shenitbe viiftar. Bring a dim to the fact that you didn't use this in an untoward manner, and then you'll be patur. It's the equivalent of what we would say, meita machmat milacha, that if the axe broke in its normal utility, then he should not be chayav, because that's the equivalent of meita machat milacha. Now, in terms of it breaking, Rashi suggests over here, bipshia, that it was negligence of the borrower that caused the problem. And that's why Rava is making a request of him to show up with Edim. On the other hand, Vilekasade, Mai, if we don't have Edim, what is the din over here? So whether Rava asked for Edim because that's the first thing we ask for anyway from the Shoel, because if there were witnesses, we prefer the witnesses come and testify than to take a Shvuah. That's something, again, we discussed earlier in the Masechta, whether you can replace Edim with a Shvuah. But here, if you have Edim, we would prefer you bring those Edim. Or, according to Rashi, there was a reason for him to ask for Edim because there was some suspicion that he had done something wrong with the item. Gemara asks, well, if there are no Edim, what do we do then? So, Tashma, Tau Gavra de Shal Narga Mechavre. We have another incident where a person borrowed an axe from his friend. Vit Varne broke. Ata the Kamei de Rav. He came before Rav Amrei. Zil Shlim Le Narga Me'alyo. Go pay him back a full-fledged brand new axe. Amalei Rav Kahana, Rav Asi, the Rav. Dina Hochi? Is that the right way to adjudicate the case? Is that really what should it be? Because when it comes to the breaking of a kli, we know when it comes to nizakin that the nizak receives everything that is left, and then the mazik has to make up the difference between whatever the remaining value is and the item that he had borrowed. But he does not have to bring him a brand new axe in order to replace it, or a brand new animal to replace. The carcass goes to the nizak, and then the mazik makes up the difference between the carcass and the live animal. Over here by the axe, it gives him the broken pieces of the axe, and then he makes up the difference between that and the value of the axe before it was broken. Veshotik Rav. Rav was silent, did not respond to them. Vehilchata. The locha is Rav Gana of Rav Asi, de mehadrele tavre umemaliole dme mono. That he gives him back the broken axe, and then he makes up for the differential between the value of the broken item and the full item, or the item before it was broken. So you see, first of all, according to this, that in terms of compensation, you do not have to provide a brand new item to the person. You have to make up for the differential between whatever the broken item is and what the full item was prior to this point in time. In addition to that, if he can't bring edim, whether it's suspicion of pshia or there are edim, and he doesn't bring the edim, he does not have the option then to take a shvua. The option to take a shvua is when we don't have either evidence of pshia or there were no edim, then he has a right to take a shvua that it's meita machmat melacha. But in these cases where there were edim, or there was suspicion of pshia, in those instances he needs edim to get himself out of the problem, or to say that it was meita machmat melacha, because otherwise we will assume that either the edim have evidence against him, and that's why he's not bringing them, or the fact that he doesn't have edim, that he didn't do this b'pshia, makes it that he is chayav, because it's no longer classified as meita machmat milacha. That's the way that Rashi learns the Gemara over here. You can see in the Balei Tosafot that the Balei Tosafot disagree with Rashi's assessment of what the Gemara's question is over here, and he brings the alternative from the Rashbam, Rashi's grandson, that we know for sure whenever it comes to repayment of nizakin, there's no question that you always have to pay whatever the difference is between the broken item and the whole item. There's no question that you don't have to bring and give him a brand new item. And so therefore, that question can't be what the Gemara is asking about over here. And the Rashbam says that Gemara instead is asking about what happens to the value from the time that the item broke until the time of Hamada Badin, which is otherwise known, we saw in the Gemara in Baba Kama, as Pchat Nevela. When the Nevela diminishes in value between the time that it was killed, the animal, or the animal died, and the time that it's brought to court. Who is responsible, or who suffers the monetary loss of that diminution in value? So we know from the Gemara in Baba Kama, and that's what the Gemara is going to answer here, that that is the problem of the Nizak. The Gemara at first has Rav's suggestion that he's going to have to make up the difference, not only between the value of the broken axe and the whole axe, but also of the diminution in value to the time that they came to Din. And that's where Rav Kahana and Rav Asi come back to him and say, wait a minute, we already learned in Baba Kama that that's not the case. And that you have to only make up the value from the moment of damage, not from the moment of Hamada Badin. The reason being that Rav compares the Shoel here to a Ganav or a Gazlan, where they become fully responsible for the item at the moment of Gnevan Gzela. And so too, the Shoel becomes fully responsible for the item at the time of the Mita. And therefore, just like the Ganav and Gazlan, at that point, that is the assessment of value that they owe. So too, the Shoel's assessed value of what he owes is that moment. Rav Kahana and Rav Asi respond and say, that is not true. We don't compare that to a Ganav or a Gazlan, because a Ganav or Gazlan, it came into their possession illegally or illicitly, and that's why they have responsibility at that point in time. The Shoel didn't come into his possession in a manner that was untoward, and therefore when he's paying here, he's no different than a Nizak and not a Gazlan or a Ganav. And so therefore, they consider this individual to be similar to a Nizak. And in that case, we assess the value at Hamada Badin. We assess the value at the time of the incident. And then whatever diminution in value is the responsibility of the Nizak, not the Mazik anymore. And so too by the Shoel. Rav, on the other hand, believes that the Shoel is similar to a Gazlan and a Ganav. And therefore, the assessed value at the time of the death is what he owes. Or the assessed value or the broken axe at that moment is what he owes. The diminution in value, then, is not the problem of the nizak or the lender in this case, similar to a gazlan and ganav, where we assess the value at the time of the theft. So over here, we're going to assess the value at the time of the death, and that's what the shoel is responsible for, and therefore there's diminution in value, just like the ganav and gazlan are responsible for that diminution in value. So too, the shoel, the borrower here, would be responsible for that diminution in value. That's the way the Balei HaTosafot read it versus Rashi's explanation. The Tosafot also add that the Rivam, who is the Rabbeinu Shmuel ben Meir's brother, Rav Yitzchak ben Rabbi Meir, another of Rashi's grandsons through the same son-in-law, Rabbi Meir, the Rivam added on to his brother's statement, the Rashbam, that they argue over here, even in a case where there's no Pchat, even in a case where there's no diminution in value from the time of the incident until Hamad Abedin, their machloket is about what we advise the individual who's making reparations over here. According to Rav, when the item breaks in the hands of the shoel, we tell him, go give him back a brand new item. Say, go give him a brand new axe. But we don't teach him that he can give back the broken axe and then just make up the differential in value. If he does want to do that, or he initiates doing that, then that will be fine. We're not going to stop him. But we won't advise him in that way. On the other hand, Rav Kahana and Rav Asi say that we teach the individual that he has a right to do this, and he has a right, therefore, to pay the broken item and then add on top of the broken item. So the Rivam says that their machloket is not just about the reduction in value, but it's also about how we come about making reparations. This might go back to our introduction to Baba Kama about the purpose of making compensation or reparations. Are we trying to make up for the diminution in value that you caused? Or are we trying to replace the item that you took away from this individual? So if we're trying to, first and foremost, replace the item, then what Rav is saying, according to the Rivam, is that give him a new item. Okay, if you don't do that, then you have to give him the broken item, and then you give him the compensation to get to the value of a brand new item. But first and foremost, we prefer, and the best way to solve the problem is for you to provide him with a new axe, a replacement axe, and then you deal with the broken pieces. On the other hand, Rav Kahana and Rav Asi say, no, the point of compensation over here is exactly that. It's to make up for the diminution in value that you caused from taking it from a full axe to a broken axe. And therefore, we would advise you up front to hand him the broken axe and then make up the differential in payment. So there are different views, according to the Rivam, might actually relate to how you view damage, especially in the context of Shomrim. What is the purpose of the compensation? Is it to replace the item? Or is it simply to make up for the lost value that you caused? So, Gavra, the Shail Davla Michavre, this individual borrowed a bucket from his friend, Itvar, and it broke. After the Kamei de Rav Papa, so he went before Rav Papa to adjudicate the case. Amalei, Aite Sade, Delo Shanitpe, Viftar, the same psak that Rovo also had given, which is bring a dim to the fact that you didn't do anything untoward, that you were not negligent in it, and then you'll be patur. So again, Rav Papa did the same thing that Rava did, but you have to assume that there was some reason that they were suspecting that he either was a posheya, or there were a dim in the case, and that's why they are demanding a dim over here to show that it was meita machmat melacha, and a shvua would not suffice. Al Gabra, the Shaul Shunya Mechavre. This individual borrowed a cat from his friend. Chabar Alei Achbere Vekadlua. So a bunch of mice teamed up on him and killed him. Yati Ravashi Vakami Baile. So Ravashi was sitting there and contemplating the case. Ki Agavna Mai. In this situation, what are we going to do? Do we say that the borrower of the item is responsible because it didn't die doing its work? It was not meita machmat melacha. On the other hand, do we say that the event or the situation is so unusual that there must be something wrong with this animal to start with, or this incident is so out of the box of an ones that we can't consider it to be something that the shoel should be chayav for? So which way is it? Ki meita machmat melacha dami. Do we compare it to the case where it dies in the course of its work? Although, or do we not say that? I mean, that the normal behavior of this animal would be to eat mice. The fact that the mice were able to overcome him means that he died, quote unquote, in his work. His work was eating mice, and he died doing that work. Now, obviously, that's not what he borrowed the cat for. He borrowed the cat for whatever other purposes he had in mind. But over here, they ended up teaming up on him. Or do we say no, that this type of death was outside the confines or the definition of the work that he borrowed the animal for, and therefore it's not classified as meita machmat milacha. Now, Tosfot is still perplexed as to what the real question here is. He says, Taima, Mai kami baile. What's the question of meita mamash machmat milacha? Isn't this what cats do? They eat mice, and that should be the equivalent of meita machmat melacha. So the question was that the fact that he put the cat in a position where there were tons of mice, does he then become responsible for it? Because he should have been careful to make sure that they couldn't overpower him, overcome him. And the fact that he put him in that predicament, or put the cat in that predicament, is his fault. Or do we simply say that there's meita machmat melacha? This is normal, and cats can deal with many mice. And so that's the question being posed over here, not whether this is the particular work that he hired it for or not the particular work. It's the predicament that he put the cat in. Is there reason to believe that he should have taken precautions here? Or do we consider this to be a normal situation in which the cat should be able to handle himself? So Amarlei Rav Mordechai the Rav Ashi. So Rav Mordechai says, Rav Ashi, Yochi Amar Rav Yimei Mehagronaya Mishmei Derovo. This we have from Avimei Magranai in the name of Rava, Gavro de Neshekatlu, if you have a man that women killed, Lodina Velodaina, we have no way to adjudicate this case or bring a judge to the situation. So again, it's a problem because it's a circumstance that shouldn't have happened. Meaning that the man, as Rashi notes over here, should have overpowered the women and should not have been in a position or a situation in which they could kill him. The fact that they killed him means that there was something wrong with him, not just the fact that they had teamed up on him or had overcome him. The fact that he was unable to defend himself or that he was unable to escape from their clutches already indicates that there's something wrong with this individual. As the Gran notes over here, it's the equivalent kameita machmat melachahu, that we classify it or we're looking at it as if he was meita machmat melacha, because he shouldn't have been captured by them. Now obviously, the Gemara is just using this as a melitza, not as necessarily a defined terminology, because there are situations or circumstances where it's very clear that the women could overpower the man or that they could be in control of the situation. They're just talking about in a normal situation where you have a man who's much stronger than the women. In that situation, the man should not have been captured. The fact that he's captured already makes the problem or some of the negligence his own doing. And similar over here, the cat should have overpowered the mice. The fact that he was unable to overpower the mice makes it like meita machmat melacha, or the equivalent of something wrong with the cat to start with that allowed the mice to overpower him. Similar to the Ramban's explanation that we spoke about before, that meita machmat melacha is a negligence of the owner or of the lender over here because there's something wrong with this item. Just like there's something wrong with the man who was captured by the women. Igadamre. Some say, Achil Achbrei Tuva V'chovil Umit, that the case here was that he ate too many mice, and then he overheated and died. Meaning that the cat died from too much pleasure or too much eating. So Yotav Rav Ashi become Ayinbo. So Rav Ashi was contemplating the case, Ki Aigav Nomai. What do we say about this case? The same safek again. Do we consider that Meita Machmat Milacha? Because the cat is engaged in its normal activity, which is the eating of mice. The fact that it went too far is something considered like Meita Machmat Milacha because it was engaged in something that it knows how to do. It knows how to control itself. It knows how to limit itself. The fact that it didn't limit itself already indicates there's something wrong with this cat or something in the feedback system of the cat that's problematic and should not be the responsibility of the shoel, of the borrower. Or do we say that the borrower has responsibility since it was not engaged in the malacha that he borrowed it for? So Malay Rav Mordechai the Rav Ashi, Yochi Amar Rav Yimei Me'agrunaya, Gavra Dineshei Katlu, Lodina V'Lodaino. So they bring the same quote again, which is that an individual was killed by women. We have no case or no judge that can deal with that situation. So before we spoke about it in terms of the women overpowering the man or their capturing of the man, over here, as Rashi notes over here, it was a case, Bal bi lo tarbe v'mate. He cohabitated with these women so much pleasure that he died from that cohabitation. So again there's an individual who, can we hold the women responsible for what happened over here? Because this individual didn't limit himself. He didn't control himself to know his limitations or to know what would cause him to expire. So therefore, how can we bring these women to task or to court over this matter if it really is the problem of the individual? And similarly by the cat. The cat needs to know its limitations, and the fact that the cat killed itself, in a sense, means that it's the responsibility of the lender, not the responsibility of the borrower. Amarava, Haiman Dubai the Mishal Mide Mechavre, Liftar. Rava here giving advice seemingly to individuals who are borrowing. Says, if you want to borrow something from someone and not be responsible for the item, When he goes to borrow the item from the lender, he should say to the lender, give me some water to drink. Because that makes it an instance of Sheila Bibalim. So either the Chiddush of Rava is the advice that he's dispensing to individuals, or the Chiddush of Rava here is that this is still classified as Sheila Bibalim. Meaning that all he's doing here is asking the lender to give him some water to drink. If he asks the lender to give him some water to drink, then the lender in some way is subjugated to the borrower because he's now servicing him or giving him service in providing him water. If at that same moment he's borrowing the item from that lender, then that we consider to be She'ela B'Balim. Again, based on the conclusion before that the She'ela B'Balim, the Balim do not need to be engaged in the same work as the item that is being borrowed. And therefore over here, where the lender is providing service to the borrower, then in that case, the borrower is borrowing B'Balim, with the Balim being involved. And Rava's Chiddush is that the simple giving of water, or providing of water of that small service, makes it or classifies it as She'ela B'Balim. If the mashil, if the lender is really smart, namele, he should respond to him and say, Shel bereisha, v'hadar ashkech. He says, take the item first, borrow it, and then I'll provide you the water after the fact. Because that's the equivalent of what we saw in the Mishnah before, that if the balim enter into a relationship after the fact, that's not called she'ela b'balim. So what he has to do is initiate the transaction for the borrowing first. Once that's done already, then if he provides him water, that's not called She'ela B'Alim. And that's the way that the Mashiel can undo or unwind what the Shoel is trying to do, the borrower is trying to do, and engage him in a situation which it will be She'ela B'Alim. Amar Rava. Rava says, Mikrei Darduke, teachers of children, Shatla. These are individuals who plant saplings for the city. The way Rashi terms it is that they plant vineyards and they take 50% of the output. Tabcho, the butcher. Omna is the bloodletter, and Safar Mata and the barber of the city, Kulan Biidan Avidatayu. All of them, when they're engaged in their work, Kesheela Bibalim Damu, is the equivalent of borrowing while the Balim are involved with this individual. So, the way that Rava is presenting this is that these individuals who serve as people in the city, so if you borrow from them, then you are then entitled to be classified as She'ela B'Balim, because these individuals provide services. The way Rashi describes it over here, as well as the Rambam, is that they have to be engaged in servicing you at that moment. Meaning that if you are getting a haircut, and while you're getting a haircut, you borrow an item from the barber, that is considered to be She'ela B'Balim. And the Chiddush here would be based on what the alternative view is, which is the view of the Rabbeinu Tam and the Ravid, which is that even if they're not engaged in servicing the individuals, since these are these service providers for the city, it's as if they're always on call for the members of the city. And that means that even if they're not giving you a haircut right now, since he is your regular barber, or the barber of the city, then it's always classified as She'ela B'Balim. And that's the Chiddush of Rav over here, that even if they're not engaged directly in servicing you, since they are servicers of the city, it automatically makes them She'ela B'Balim. So then, there it's obvious what the Chiddush is, according to Rabbeinu Tam and the Ravid, is that even if they're not engaged directly in servicing you, that's called She'ela B'Balim. On the other hand, Rashi and the Rambam, who say that you actually have to be engaged in work, then what's the Chiddush? The Chiddush is that we don't say, like the Rabbeinu Tam and the Ravid, that we don't suggest that they are considered to be servicing you when they are not servicing you, since they're on call for the people of the city, or to service the people of the city. So Amrulei Rabbanan the Rava, the Rabbanan, seemingly based on what Rava just said about these other professionals in the city, Shaulan Mar, you in a sense, Rava, are servicing us, because you are a teacher of Torah, we are learning from you, and therefore we are, in a sense, using your services, and if we borrowed from you, it would be the equivalent of She'ela B'Balim, because we have a certain amount of quote-unquote control or auspices over you because you are servicing us or providing us with the learning of Torah. Ikpid, Rava was upset about what they said, whether he was upset because he thought they were halachically incorrect, or he was upset because he took offense to the fact that they said that he was at their beck and call. Amalu, lafkuye mimonai kabaitu. You're trying to cheat me out of my money or steal my money, meaning that anything you borrow from me, now you're saying is She'ela B'Balim. Adarabba, your understanding is mistaken here. Atun shil toni. You guys are servicing me. Dilo ano matzi ishtemute lechumi mesechta lemesechta. I can move you guys around for whatever mesechet I want to learn. Atun lo matzi lemishtemute. You can't force me to learn what you want to learn. Meaning, I as the teacher have control over the situation because I'm able to determine what the curriculum is, or I can determine I'm ready to learn this mesechta, and therefore you guys have to learn that mesechta. You have no control over what I'm teaching. You have no control over the content. So it's actually the other way around. You, in a sense, are servicing me because I want to review mesechta, and therefore you're there for me to teach you, and I am the one who is receiving the services from you because you guys are listening and learning from me. So Rava actually reverses the situation, says it's just the opposite. So Gemara says, Velohi. Gemara says it's not the case. I mean, it's not the case like the Talmidim said. It's not like the way Rava said, but rather, Ihu shaldehu b'yom dekala. In the time period Rashi claims over here where they learnt before the regel, where they studied the halachot of the upcoming regel, over there, Rava was, in a sense, subjugated to them, because he had to provide them with the content that was relevant to the regel. And over there, he doesn't have a right to switch it around. He has to teach them about the regel. So in those situations, in those circumstances, Rava is like any of the other professional servicers over here, that when he's teaching, he is, in a sense, providing them a service. And if they borrow from him, they'd be patur, because it would be sheila bin ba'alim. On the other hand, in the remainder of the year, where it wasn't the yomei dekala, inu shilulei bishar yomei. Any other time of the year, they are subject to his whim because he can decide what they learn and he can change the topic. So the difference, as the Gemara points out, is whether he has control over the curriculum. In situations where he has no control over the curriculum, then he is considered to be servicing them and he is subject to their beck and call because he has to teach them exactly what the topics are. Now, whether that is the kala, like Rashi says, the lifnei regel, but whether that's when they announce they're going to be learning at certain points in the year, this mesechta, it's already locked in that he's going to have to teach that mesechta, that situation makes him as a servicer of the individuals. On the other hand, in circumstances where there's no fixed curriculum and he can move them around, then he's the one in the controlling position, and in a sense, they are servicing him. Mreimar Bar Chanina, Oger Kadnataita Bechuzai. Rameir Baruch Hanina rented out mules to Bechuzai. Nafak Lidluye Tuna Bahadayu. They were loading up the mules, and he helped them to load the mules. Pashuba. They were negligent with it. Umit. And then the animal died. Atu the Kamei Durava. They came before Rava to adjudicate the case. Chayvinu. And he made them Chayav. He obligated them to pay back Mreimar Bar Chanina. Amrulei Rabban on the Rava. So the Talmidim say to Rava, Pshia Babalimi. Isn't that negligence with the Balim there? So now there are two assumptions. One of the assumptions the Gemara will address in a second. But number one is, and this is the most important assumption, is that there was Sheila Bibalim here. Because of the fact that Mreimar Bar Chanina helped them to load up the mules, it made it Sheila Bibalim, and that gives them an exemption. They should be patur. The second assumption here is something that we just discussed in the Gemara, whether Pshia Bibalim is classified under the category of Sheila Bibalim. Meaning, does Shomer Chinam have a patur of Sheila Bibalim? This assumes yes. So Ichsif, Arava was embarrassed about the Psak. The Sofig Lai Milta, the Mesar to Unahu de Nofak, that he did not help them to load the animal, but he went over there to take a look and to see what they were doing to make sure that they didn't overload the animal, but he wasn't physically engaged in helping them to load the animal. He was not involved in the loading of the animal. So therefore, there was no She'ila Bibalim. So now we solved one of the problems. The Rova's Psak was right because there was no Sheila Babalim and there was negligence by the borrower and therefore the borrower is responsible. Mar says, Anicha Lamanda Mar Pshia Babalim Patur. This whole story works well according to the one who says that when you are a Posheya, after you've borrowed Bibalim, that then you're still exempt. Shemachi Iksif. That's why Rova was embarrassed by giving the wrong Psak. Lamanda Mar Chayav, according to the one who says that Pshia Babalim, you're Chayav, even when the Baalim are involved, there's Sheila Babalim. Ma'ichsif, why was Rava embarrassed? He gave the right psak. Well, mifshap shashuba. Mara says the story was not correct. They were not negligent in the mule dying. Ela ignuve ignov umeta kidarka. Beganav bave. The animal was stolen and then it died a natural death in the house of the ganav. So the story was otherwise, which is that the animal was stolen and then it died a natural death in the hands of the ganav. Va'atu the kamei de Rava. And now the borrowers are coming before Rava. And he said, you are responsible. And when they rabbana on the rova, gneva bebalimi. What do you mean? This is Gneva Bibalim, because we saw that Mremar Bar Chanino helped them to load the mule. If he was helping them to load the mule, that's Sheila Bibalim. And now you have Gneva afterwards. Gneva is definitely Patur when you have Sheila Bibalim. So that's why Ichsif, Rava, was embarrassed. The Sofia Galei Milta, the Meser Tunahu the Nafak, that he didn't go out to help them load the animal, but rather just to ensure, oversee the fact that they weren't doing anything wrong. Now, in terms of the animal dying Beganav, Tosfot already asks, Tema, Tvim Tomar, Mai Tzarich Lamar, the Meta Beganav. Why does the animal have to die in the hands of the Ganav? So he says, Veish Lamar, Mishum de Zeta'u, Otam Shesavru, Mishum Meta Bipshia. Says that's exactly what the mistake was, that they thought that there was negligence here that caused the death of the animal. That's exactly what they thought happened here, that there was negligence that caused the death of the animal. And so the dying in the Beganav, they thought it was indicative of the fact that there was some sort of pshia, some sort of negligence over here. But the case becomes clear that they didn't die there because of negligence, but rather died there a natural death. And that was what caused the misunderstanding and why they had to explain to us the case now that it wasn't a case of negligence. The other hand, Rashi notes over here, Vafilu ochi chayavim, dimnami shavka malachamavet Beganav havakaimu. So Rashi says that this Gemara is also feeding on a chiddush or a conclusion that we had in the Gemara in Baba Kama, which is that when it dies a natural death in the house of the ganav, you are still responsible for the animal. And that is because even if the animal survived, you would not be able to get your hands on it because it was in the hands of the ganav. So even though you might be patur in a case of meta kedarka, in a case of natural death, that doesn't hold true when it's in the hands of the ganavim. So when it's in the hands of the Ganavim, then even if it was to stay alive, you still wouldn't be able to return it to the owners. And therefore, you are responsible for it when it dies natural death in the hands of the Ganavim. And therefore, Misha Nignava Chayab B'Tashlumim. As soon as it's stolen, they become responsible for the animal, despite the fact that the animal died Meta Kedarka. Because a Socher normally would be Patur from Meta Kedarka. But over here, this socher is chayav because he is chayav for Gneva Vaveda. And since the animal, if it had not died, would still be in the hands of the Ganavim, therefore the socher is responsible in this case, even though it was Meta Kedarka. Okay, the Mishnah now begins and says, Ashuelet Apara, someone who borrowed a cow or an ox. Sha'ala chatziyom, uschara chatziyom. He borrowed it for half of the day and rented it for half of the day. Sha'ala hayom, v'sachra lemachar. He borrowed it for today, but rented it for tomorrow. Sachara chat, v'sha'ala chat. He borrowed two animals. He ended up renting one of the animals and borrowing one of the animals. Umeita. And then, in the latter case, one of the animal dies, or in the earlier case, the animal that he borrowed or rented died. Hamash'ilomer, the lender says, she'ula meita. That the one that he lent out was the one that died. Bayom shaita shula meta. That it died on the day that it was lent out. Bishat shaita shula meta. Or at the time that it was borrowed, it died. So he's referencing all the different cases that were in the Mishnah and declaring that he is certain that the animal died during the period of sheila. In the first instance, he's saying that the one that was borrowed out of the two animals was the one that died. In the second instance, he's saying on the day that it was borrowed, it died. And the third instance, he's saying during the day, in the hours that it was borrowed, that it died. V'hala omer, and the borrower says, Eni yodea, I don't know. Chayav, he is responsible. We will see in the Gemara that this is based on the concept of bori v'shema. When someone has a definitive claim and the other party only has a shema claim, bori odif. That the definitive claim or the person with certainty trumps in this situation. Again, it will be a machloket amoraim in the Gemara as to how to explain the Mishnah and whether this principle is always true. In the next possibility, hasocher omer, the renter says, schura meta, that the rented one died, biyom shaita schura meta, or on the day that I rented it, it died, obisha shaita schura meta, or on the time period in that half day when it was rented, that's when it died. V'hala omer, and the lender in this case says, Eni yodea, I don't know, patur. Again, this is the bari and shema in reverse, which is that the borrower or renter over here is certain that it died in the period of the rental, or the animal that was rented died. The person that lent it out has no idea, and therefore he is patur, because you have a bari and shema in the reverse order. Ze omer shu'ula, v'ze omer tzchura. They both make bari claims, which is the individual was borrowing says it was during the rental period, and the person who was lending says no, it was during the lending period in the case when it was shi'ula, shava, asocher suschura meita,
which the Gemara will indicate is a result of a Gilgul Shua because of Shuata Shumrim, at least according to Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda. Therefore, since he's already taking a Shua that it was Meta Kedarka, we also force him to take a Shua that it was this Shura, it was the rented one that died. Whereas for Rav Nachman, the impetus for the Shua here is a Muda B'miktzat, an outside variable which he will impose on the Mishnah in order to reconcile with his position that we will see in the Gemara tomorrow.
Or in this situation or circumstance where both of them say we don't know, yachloku, then they split the difference, meaning that they split the cost of the animal that was lost over here. So this would be according to the one who says that mamona mutal b'safek, money that is left in an uncertain circumstance, chokim, we divide it. And so that is the position of sumchos, other places in Shas. And so over here, where they're both declaring what they think happened as certain, and they both make a bari claim, or in the situation where they both make a shema claim, over there we don't have any way to adjudicate or make a decision between them, and therefore we say that they should split it. Now there are two basic questions that the Rishonim deal with in this Mishnah. The first of which is, why do we need all the cases in the Mishnah? So Tosafot asks that question. He says that the Mishnah is structured in a lozu avzuktani. Not only this, but also this. In that as you move through the Mishnah, there's a greater chiddush in the cases through the Mishnah. And as Tosfot points out, that in the first situation where it's half day rented, half day borrowed, then in that situation, there's a real safek, because you have a real situation in which there can be mistakes or doubt about what happened over here, versus the next situation in which you have one day where it's rented and one day where it is borrowed. Over there, there are much clearer delineations or differentiations between the two periods of time. And not only that, but even in a situation where the animals are totally separate, in that situation, I would have thought that this safek is not sufficient grounds to say yachloku. And so, according to the Baal HaTosafot vote, as you move through the cases in the Mishnah, you're creating situations that are less in doubt, or there's less safek about them. And therefore, you would be less likely to determine in the end that yachloku, that they should split it. Despite that fact, when they both say Zeshema and Zeshema, we say Yachloku, despite the fact that there's less and less Safek as you move through the Mishnah. And that's how the Baal HaTosafot described the Chiddush of the Mishnah, that the Chiddush increases as you move through the Mishnah. And so therefore, in a case of Shema Veshema, all of these cases, you would still say Yachloku. Other Rishonim say that the Chiddush is in the first case, which is that in the latter cases where the person makes a bari claim, where he makes a definitive claim, then it makes sense that we could believe him or say that his bari claim carries weight, because again, there's clearer delineation in the latter half of the Mishnah, or in the cases as we progress through the Mishnah. On the other hand, in the first case where it's safek between in one half of the day or one part of the day he's a borrower and one half of the day he is a renter, over there the question about whether he could really be bari or certain is much less. And therefore, the biggest chiddush is in that first case, where there's a bari being made, claim being made by the borrower. We still believe him, despite the fact that it's less likely that he should know the information, or that he could be certain about the information. So according to Rishonim, like the Rashba, the chiddush of the Mishnah is that first case where the borrower is making a tanat bari, and the lender is making a tanat shema, and we see over there that he is patur, despite the fact that there is a real safek here, meaning the first case where he's half day like this, half day like that. Nevertheless, his claim of bari carries weight. According to the Baal HaTosafot, it's the other way around. Meaning that the last scenario of Shema Veshema, that they split it, that is the chiddush of the Mishnah. And that's despite the fact that there's more and more clarity as we move through the Mishnah, and there should be less likely a situation where they're both saying Shema, especially from the perspective of the borrower who was in control or had the animals in hand. And therefore, he should have been able to determine between them or to know what really happened. And therefore, his Shema is a very weak Shema over there. Despite that fact, we still say Yachloku. The second question that is raised by the Rishonim over here, and it really derives from the Gemara, as we're going to see later, is the problem of Gilgul Shvua. In all of these instances, doesn't the Shomer, the person who's watching, have to take a Shvuat HaShomrim? The Shvuat HaShomrim demands of the individual to take a Shvuah that he was not Poshea in the animal, and that the animal actually died or whatever happened based on what he says. That's an obligation of any shomer who wants to be patur. And what the Baalei Tosafot raises, once he already has to take a shvata shomrim, why can't we be megalgel? Why can't we roll onto him the additional shvuot or information that we want to know? So for instance, in the case where he claims that it died when it was borrowed, why can't we say to him, okay, you have to take a shvuah that it died a natural death. That's the only way a socher is going to be patur. And since he has to take that shvuah, we can be megalgel on him the other shvuah as to whether it was the rented or the borrowed time, the rented animal or the borrowed animal. We could force a shvuah on the individual. And so then why does the Mishnah over here either demand, according to some Amoraim, a reason to make you chayav in Shvuah? Or in the other cases, why are you chayav or patur without having to take a Shvuah to substantiate your position? And so therefore the Baalei Tosafot come up with a number of answers that are also brought by other Rishonim. Now, some of the answers that the Baalei Tosafot themselves realize only answer certain of the cases or circumstances that they have. One of the answers is that you can only do a Gilgul Shvuah where you have a bari claim, or you have a definitive claim. When you have a definitive claim, then you can go ahead and be megalgel other items with it. That means that in most of the cases of the Mishnah, with the exception of one, the individual who is making a claim here has only a shema claim. He only has a maybe claim. And since he has a maybe claim, then he can't be megalgel a shvuah on top of that. That's despite the fact that the issue of gilgul shvuah is learned from sota. And sota is a case of safek. So despite the fact that the shvua by a sota is a safek or derives from a safek, and there we learn gilgul shvua, nonetheless over here you can't make a gilgul shvua where your claim is only shema. The reason being is that by sota, the gilgul shvua derives not only from a safek circumstance, but a safek circumstance that has reglein the davar, where there's circumstantial evidence that implicates the woman. And so that only in that situation do we say you're allowed to have gilgul shvua. But in a case when you're dealing with a real safek, over there you would not have the ability, or when you're making a shema claim, you would not have the ability to be megalgel shvua. Many Rishonim reject that answer. First of all, it does not answer all the cases in our Mishnah. And number two is that they think that sota is the paradigm, and since sota is bisafek, then any case where you have a safek, you're allowed to be megalgel a shvua. The other possibility that the Baalei Tosafot toy with was how closely related does the item have to be to the actual shvuah, the core shvuah that you are taking. And here they differentiate between cases in which you're making a bari claim, a definitive claim, and therefore you can be megalgel shvuah even with things that are completely disconnected, versus a case where you're making a shema claim, maybe there you can be megalgel shvuah if the situation or the shvuah is connected very closely to the original shvuah that he's taking. The second possible answer that the Baalei Tosafot suggests is in a situation when a person says, any yodea, I don't know, then that doesn't make him chayav. Generally, we have a principle, which is, a person who is supposed to take a shvuah, if he doesn't take the shvuah, then he is chayav. So in our circumstance, the core shvuah he can take. He can say it was meita kedarka, it died a natural death. The other shvuah, where we're asking him to say whether it happened at the time of the schirut or the time of the she'ilah, he says, any yodea, I don't know. So then, in other circumstances, we would say, he can't take the shvuah, he is chayav. Over here, we won't say that, because that's only true when you're talking about the core shvuah. But when it comes to gilgul shvuah, when you roll a shvuah onto the individual, then shema or any yodea is sufficient response to that shvuah that you are not chayav. That is the reasoning that the Rosh brings, and the Ran also brings it in the name of the Ravid, that over here, the reason that the gilgul shvuah doesn't work is because he could say shema or any yodea back. Now, the Baalei Tosafot say, well, if that's the case, then it becomes a migo, that any time you're telling a person he has to take a shvuah, if any yodea gets him out of the problem, then we should believe him when he makes a claim. So the Baalei Tosafot say that that's not a good migo, because people don't want to be in positions of safek, or they don't want to be in circumstances of safek where they have a definitive answer. And therefore, when a person says any yodea, that's the only thing that affects. It's not a great claim, because it's only a claim if the person truly doesn't have information or sufficient information to bring an answer. Now, even that answer, again, only answers a portion of the cases here in the Mishnah, because it only deals with cases where the gilgul shvuah in the response of the individual is a response of shema. But in the case where the nidva's response is a bari, it doesn't solve your problem. In addition to that, there are many Roshonim that point out that it's just not true, that the Gemara in other places allows a gilgul shvuah to be utilized, and when the person can't take the shvuah, we make them chayav. Another possibility brought by the Tabali Tosfot over here is that we don't allow you to make a Gilgul Shvuah on someone who responds Shema. Because in that case, it's different than the case of Sotah. By the Sotah, the woman declares her innocence, and therefore we force her to take a Shvuah. But over here, where the person is not making a counterclaim that is definitive, then there is no option for Gilgul Shvuah. Another possibility that's brought down by the Ritva is a suggestion that, in this case, you would only be chayav to take a shvuah if you are a socher. If you are a shoel, then you wouldn't be chayav to take a shvuah because you'd automatically be chayav. So in that instance, you can't be migalgel on him a shvuah that would be relevant to a shoel, because if he was a shoel, then he wouldn't have to take the shvuah to start with. And therefore, you can't be migalgel the shvuah. Again, this only works well in cases where there is a tanat bari by the nitba, that he's a socher, and that it happened during the period of the time that he was a socher. Over there, you can't be migalgel the shvuah on him to take a shvuah that he was a shoel, because it would be in contradiction to his initial claim. And if you are right that he's a shoel, he wouldn't even have to take a shvuah. So therefore, you can't be migalgel a shvuah in this instance. Again, this only answers the cases where there's a bari claim by the nitba. In the end, the answer that the Baalei Tosfot will give that is the strongest answer, because it covers all the bases, is to say this is a circumstance in which the individual doesn't have to take a shvuat hashomrim. For instance, it's a case where the lender believed the borrower and says that I don't require a shvuah to know that it was meta gedarka. Whether that was either upfront, he had already agreed to that, or whether we have a deem to the fact that it died a natural death, or whether after the fact the individual says I believe him with regards to meta gedarka. In all those circumstances, he would not need to take a shvuah. And since he would not need to take a shvuah, then in that instance, you're not going to have a gilgul shvuah unless there's another reason or an outside impetus for bringing in a shvuah, which Rav Nachman, we're going to see in the Gemara, says that it was a case of modeh b'miktzat. And that really solves all the problems, with the exception of the case where they both make a bari claim. In the case where they both make a definitive claim, that case where it says, Zeh omer shulah v'zeh omer shchura yishava, asucher shchura meita. So then why over there does he have to take a shvuah if all the cases in the Mishnah are cases where he believed him? So Tosafot says that that case is different. Because in all the other cases where one of the parties makes a Shema claim, and in the cases where there's a Shema claim by either party over here, whether it's the Toveya or the Nitba, then it's likely that the individual who lent the item out will believe the person, either because he doesn't know any better, or even when he knows the individual is saying Shema, so then he believes him with regards to that matter of the animal dying a natural death. And therefore we have to come up another reason for him to take a shvuah. The exception to that is when they both make a bari claim, where the lender says it happened when it was lent, and when you borrowed it, and the borrower says, no, it happened when I was renting it. Over there, the individual does not believe the defendant because he knows that he's already lying. They are coming up against each other with a bari claim, and that means that the toveya, the claimant, already believes that the defendant is lying here because he's making a claim against him, which he thinks is completely wrong. So in that instance, he's not going to also believe him with regards to the fact that it was meita kedarka, and that's what generates the need for a shvuah in that case. And that's how the Baalei Tosafot create a circumstance or situation in which all the cases of the Mishnah do not have a shvuat hashomrim, with the exception of the case where zeh omer shulah v'zeh omer shchura, that there is Yishavah because of Shvuat HaShomrim, at least according to Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda, who disagree with Rav Nachman that there is no Modeh B'miktzat over here. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Gemara on the middle of Tzadi Zayin Amud Bet.